I'll talk to police or converse with her for the darling G's and her churn. Had to walk through the grief was the worst feeling. The fall for the fee and the work killing. The thoughts with the tree and the verse sipping. Try to talk to relieve, but the words missing. The talk then I leave was the first victim. Did they saw all the need, all the urge in her? All the shit you need to read on the turn setting. They already seen the peak, but the year did it. 23 around the earth, see the world different. Deep into the dirt, seen the pearl glisten. God bleed for I learn, a third listen. Yeah, I peed the concern, it's a third section. Return when you miss me with a verse written. From the birds to the city, real curve villain. So alert when you hit me, no burn bridges. I'ma give it how it is, no jerk gimmick. So permanent, I'ma splurge on the no first limit. We got over to the witches, no curse lifted. Son, show me y'all's gifts in my deterred spirit. Me and Brody Young's mission make you turn rigid. Try and get it out my system, how I earn quickest.
All right, we are back, and this week we are the Kung Fu Yeet Masters. Quentin, how are you doing this evening?
I was informed of a match that is about to take place, or is scheduled to take place, and I felt really disturbed in my spirit about it. Did you know that Jey Uso and Damian Priest is going to happen?
Oh, come on. How would I, number one, how would I know that? Obviously.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Zero reason why I would have any fucking idea that that was coming up. Number one. Number two, why?
Well, yeah,
I guess because that's like the top guys on that, whatever show they're on. I don't know.
Yeah, as you see, you know, main event Jey Uso, he beat his brother. And that means right. Jey is now a guy that's in line for a title shot, and then I think he won some number one contenders match or some shit, and yeah, so Damian Priest, Jey Uso.
Yeah, what's funny is because I watched the Yeet versus No Yeet match on 2x speed without sound, I have really had no clue who won, like because they just look the same, and there's like I just absolutely could not have told you who won. But yeah, I guess that makes sense. Main event, Jey Uso, obviously.
He called himself to be the main event. He called himself the Yeet Master.
The Yeet Master General?
He called himself the Yeet Master during a promo. And
I saw a clip that someone posted of Cody saying, "Until we yeet again." That was a good one. I liked that.
And like I struggle with how Jey Uso hasn't been assassinated yet.
It's gotta be coming. You know what they should do? Is that if they ever do, they should do a trios with Jey Uso and DIY, and then when they do their two knees or whatever, and then he does a super kick and they call it Yeet in the Middle. Yeah, that would be a good one. That's actually probably too clever for them.
That one they probably couldn't even get that one. His reign of terror continues, and until this man is put down and compromised to a permanent end, I feel the need to just have Jey Uso updates. So, like, however long this continues on this show, I'm not sure. But, like, until I am rid of Jey Uso, I feel the need to tell people, like, what is the latest thing he's done to piss me off. But I'm going to relax. This is not a Jey Uso podcast. So what we're going to do is I'm going to have a good day because the Celtics won today. And we're going to talk about wrestling. And then hopefully we're going to be done in time because as we're recording, it is the Sunday that AEW's Dynasty show is happening. And it's not the best show, but something I probably still want to watch live. So I'm going to have a good night tonight. I'm going to have a good night.
It looks, to me, it looks like a solid show on paper. It was when it was just 8 matches. Then obviously they have to continuously add more and more. They still, I mean, they didn't add anything bad, but they just add more and more and it's not necessary. I'm honestly getting really sick of that. It was one of the main issues I had with AEW. But I did have a thought recently, and it, you know, obviously we didn't plan on it, we didn't set it up, it wasn't going to happen anyways, but it's just been mentioned and brought up now. Pay-per-view, PLE, major show prediction, and pre-show kind of things that people do, like on podcasts before a pay-per-view, I think that they're kind of stink and are played out at this point, and I don't really want to do them ever again, you know what I mean? Mm. Like when you do the like, oh, it's like, let's talk about like what's coming up on the pay-per-view or whatever. Like, I just don't think it's like, it's necessary really. You know,
I feel like it's a fine thing to do when like there's any actual interesting booking stuff that you can think about. But otherwise it just feels kind of like forced. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 I did want to talk about, and I don't know if you saw like the Mustafa Ali and Storm Grayson match from the Freelance
I meant
show.
to. I that
Okay.
is one I meant to watch. I didn't get around to it yet.
And then if you saw like did you watch the New Japan Windy City Riot or at least some of it?
I one, the week was kind of busy for me. But then two,
Sure, sure.
like so much happened within like the week. And I gave myself this goal of I was gonna watch at least half of Rey de Parejas. I was like really
Yeah,
adamant
yeah.
on this goal that I'm at least gonna watch that. So the majority of my wrestling watching has been Dragon Gate and then like today AEW. So like I still have the Windy City show on my computer and I
Sure.
just haven't gotten around to it yet.
All right. Well, we could maybe talk about some of the stuff from the Windy City thing kind of later. I would recommend checking out the Ollie and Storm Grayson match. I know that there's people who are kind of down on Ali, but then I also, there's some people who are high on him. I think I'm one of them. I think it really speaks to like a to just kind of what you're looking for. Obviously, it's funny because people right now are so focused on this like tribalism conversation. Oh, who's being tribalism, and all this, and like WWE versus AEW. And it's funny because like it is kind of the reason why the WWE stuff online works so well. And I'm not, this is not, again, my personal, like, I'm the first person who's ever come up with saying this, but it is true. The AEW fan base is a lot more splintered, whereas the WWE fan base is a lot more, like, especially the hardcores are a lot more just like, the only thing I care about and watch is WWE. That's number one. Whereas like people who are into AEW are going to be a little bit more open and be a lot more intellectually honest about saying that it's not good when it's not good, rather than just pretending like everything's great. And even subsections of kind of what is that greater AEW like adjacent fan base, there's like the subsections, and it I think plays into what I'm saying about Ali, where it's like the people who are really turned off by anything that's like sports entertainy, anything that's like a little bit more like character driven. Even to the point of something like what Ali's been doing, which I think is actually like a good version of it, that's almost a little bit more old school character work. They just look at it as, oh, the WWE guy is doing WWE and he's not like doing all the big work rate stuff. Whereas other people I think are able to appreciate it as like, yeah, it's like more of an old school wrestling thing as opposed to just a WWE thing. One thing that did stick out to me in the two matches, with the one on Windy City Riot and the one on Freelance for Ali, is that he's got the red, white, and blue gear that has this giant kind of eagle-winged insignia on the side of the leg that really kind of is reminiscent of Cody Rhodes. And he's playing this political character, rah-rah, not necessarily exactly rah-rah USA, but kind of when you kind of play
And,
that.
and like the whole thing, like kind of like being like wanting to make wrestling a better place and get rid of,
Yeah.
yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. So the whole thing feels very much like he's doing a Cody Rhodes-esque pastiche. Even down to both matches, he's getting color like Cody was doing early on in his AEW run with like the big matches. You blade all the time and have a bunch of blood. So it is kind of interesting watching that and thinking like, is this MF really just kind of doing like a Cody, like he's doing a Cody Rhodes thing? Is it intentional that like he kind of plays it up as a heel, so he's kind of almost doing like a lampooning of the Cody Rhodes thing, or is he earnestly trying to do like, yeah, like trying to do like, well, it got him over, so I'm gonna do it to get me over? It's kind of interesting to watch, and I just kind of picked up
Could he
on
do
it.
it even beyond like that? Like think about the kind of post-match speeches he's been doing, at least like on like his indie stuff. Because I guess in TNA he's been more straightforward into the heel act. But when you watch him across say DPW or C4 or anything like that, is that you would get some post-match Ali promo where he would go back to more of that baby face, man, I really love this city and like this like and like doing all that sort of stuff. So even down to that is something that feels kind of Cody-ish compared to
Yeah.
like what Cody used to be doing.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Cody is the biggest star in wrestling, and I think it's flying over some people's heads they're not even picking this up or seeing it, you know, because I've not heard anybody referencing that. All I've heard is basically, like I said, the two sides of it being, oh, it's boring, he's doing shtick, or, you know, the stuff like what I've been saying, oh, it's like really good, and like it's kind of old school the way that he's playing up the heat and stuff and not just doing a ton of moves. But I had not heard anybody point out just how almost one for one at this point he's doing Cody Rhodes the act, he's doing Cody Rhodes style matches, like he's doing Cody. And it's kind of interesting because, as I said, like Cody's the number one babyface in the world, so like it's kind of funny to just be like, fuck it, I'm just gonna like do like a kind of a copy of that and try to get over. It seems to work, you know. He's not like at the level that Cody was before even going to WWE, but you know, he's still building up. We could actually see him get there, and I think he's got everything he needs to make it happen. But I thought that was interesting.
What do you think of the matches though? Like just because you saw them, what do you think of them?
Oh, you know, I thought Stu Grayson match, or not Stu Grayson, Storm Grayson was very good. It was a little bit over the top with the overbooking. But I think that there was some room to even go further with the bullshit. I think they actually ended up executing it pretty well. So I did appreciate that. The crowd is obviously like, they're going to be into him. So I almost can see doing it the way they did as kind of a mulligan. I've talked about it before with like PWG, where it was like the opening match being like just a Brian Cage match, and people were always kind of like, you know, why would you do that? And it's like, because the crowd is so hot that you don't even want to give them anything that they need to pay attention to, because they're just going to lose their mind. It was kind of like, okay, Ali's first match here, even though it's like we're giving him a world championship match on his first night here, we really don't have to deliver anything when it comes to like him winning the title or doing anything big, because the crowd is going to be so hot, and we can kind of use this as just a table setting to then kind of do what's the next stories down the line. And I think they did a great job, because Grayson comes out of it as like a nuclear heel. You got to see it. And I don't even know if you care about me kind of spoiling it or spoiling it even for the people listening, but he does probably one of the most dastardly heel things you could do. And he does it right at the perfect time, where it's just like there's so much chaos and there's so much craziness going on. And then he does it, and then everything erupts and explodes. And then it's almost like, as I said, like you could feel a little cheated because you're like, oh, we got to fuck finish. But because you pay it off with something that big, it's almost like understandable. And you forget in the moment that like you're kind of getting cheated out of a good finish. So I thought that that was all done really well. The Hiromu match was, like, I thought solid. The blood actually added a lot to it. I thought that Mustafa did a ton, so I do think it's crazy that I hear kind of, like, oh, he seems like he's being lazy, because it's, like, I just think that that's a little bit nuts, because he did a ton. Hiromu is Hiromu at this point. I mean, he's over, whatever, but he just, I think he's kind of washed. He can't really wrestle that much. He can't do that much. He doesn't really seem like a guy who puts a lot of thought into his matches. And I really hate to say it, but it does feel a little bit like the Hiromu rise and, you know, getting to the championship, and even like the stuff he was doing that got him over to begin with, is a lot of like being carried by stuff being fresh and novel, and being in there with people that are people trying to make stuff better from him, that are putting a lot more thought into what he's doing than he does. Cause now that he's kind of on his own, and just, he just feels like he's kind of floundering, if I'm honest. I guess the other thing to mention on that show is the Jack Perry Shota Umino stuff. I don't know. I know you haven't seen the match. I don't know if you've heard anything about it.
I'm aware of it. I'm aware that like of the reaction that Jack got coming out, and I'm aware that like after the match, after Shota beat him, he, you know, did like regular like respectful stuff, and it seems like Jack is on his way back to AEW pretty soon.
Yeah, I've said it, and I think that it's what makes the most sense. It even makes the sense in the context of what happened here, which was confusing on paper. It sounds confusing on paper. He's the scapegoat. He's this big heel. He comes out, he gets this nuclear reaction for the crowd just hating him. But then also some of the crowd were into him, so it is kind of tough to say he's kind of 50-50. The thing I hated was the commentary, and it's partially their fault, and it's partially not their fault. They're kind of like Grimes at Coachella Fest, you know, it's not my fault, but it is. They kept talking about, like, oh, you can barely hear us talking because it's just so loud. It's deafening in here. The reaction is huge. And, like, that may have been true, but it's one of those, again, like, you're telling me and not showing me, because the audio mixing was done in a way where they were still loud enough to be heard easily over the crowd reaction. So it's like, it just sounded like, you guys keep talking about how hot and loud this crowd is, but I really can't hear it. That, like, to the where it's, like, deafening, because they turned it down. Like, you could tell it was hot, and they kept talking about how hot it was, and he was getting chants that you could hear, but you could definitely tell that it was being turned down. You know what I mean? Because it was like, even when the crowd was chanting, it was like muted. And it's like, you know, crowds don't chant in muted. Everyone, when you chant, you're chanting with your full throat, right? You know? So yeah, it was just, that kind of hurt that part of it. But my point being that, like, having him do the respect, shake the hand, blah, 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 at the end, kind of plays into my thought that, like, a lot of people are predicting that he comes in and joins with the Elite and the Young Bucks. I honestly see the opposite. Because the Young Bucks are supposed to be pretending like they have power. They're kind of the, you know, the figureheads for the company. And he's the scapegoat because he's getting blamed and punished by the company for not, you know, for them, for something he doesn't believe that he should be getting punished for. So why would he side with them?
Yeah,
he's going to come in and...
Yeah. Those two things, like, completely conflict. You're right. Yeah, like, those two things conflict. Yeah.
So my thought is he's going to come in and be like, fuck you guys trying to use my name for clout, just, you know, winking and nodding about, like, oh, good work, scapegoat. If you guys have so much power and you like me so much, why weren't you able to keep me from getting sent away?
Yeah.
Why, like, did I still get in trouble if you guys are in control here? Obviously, you were okay with me getting punished.
Yeah, like, where were you guys when I got sent home? Type of thing. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what I see. And I think that'd be interesting, because you also have, you've got basically anyone from House of Torture can come in and join Jack for, like, Forbidden Door and take on the Elite, including Okada. And you've got built-in storylines with Okada leaving the company and people still wanting a shot at him. So you really could use, you could use Ren, you could use Evil. You know what I mean? You can have both of them, really, both of them with Jack, and they both want to get at Okada because he, you know, he ran away before they got a chance to get him, you know, and it's like a natural story there as well. So that's what makes sense to me. But you know, who am I, right? Either way, Saber Riddle, not really worth your time.
I really just want to know what he did to, like, come in and, like him enough and want to push him enough to win the title. And then this happened. I really would love to know what the story was there. Not that it matters. Right. I would just love to know for it to be a thing where even New Japan was like, actually, you know what? Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, the rumor is, right, that he was doing he did matches that were, like, approved by the company as title matches. So,
okay.
Yeah, like, small indies were calling his matches title matches when they weren't officially, like, sanctioned by IWC. That pissed him off. There is also something about, like, he made some kind of reference to drugs on a promo or something like that that they didn't like, which it's like, what do you expect, right? You
know, exactly, like, yeah.
You know who you're getting into bed with here. And then there's also the people that report that, like, that, you know, that there's nothing and that he still has dates and he's not necessarily gone. I don't take that seriously because that's coming from, let's say, people who have not been the most reliable lately when it comes to sourcing information. Meanwhile, the other stuff is coming from places that I do take a little bit more seriously, I'll say. So, you know. Ishii and Nemeth, I would recommend. Definitely check it out. Moxley and Naito was like a, you know, is about what it was going to be. Moxley, I think it's really, your mileage may vary depending on your opinion on Moxley, right?
Do you find it weird that I get the reason to put the belt on Moxley, but I also am kind of like, I am sympathetic towards the, like, can Naito just, like, he's your biggest star, can he just have the title? Now, like, I understand, like, maybe the goal is to get somewhere where, like, you have maybe, like, Shota Umino beat Moxley. Like, I'm guessing, like, in theory, that's kind of the idea here, but I don't think Umino's ready, and would they, like I don't know, like, once they get to Dominion, like, are we just gonna run back Moxley and Naito? Are they going to run Mox? Like, I'm kind of like just confused by it, because I would think that, hey, like, why don't you just have Naito keep the belt?
Yeah. I really don't know that I think that that Naito, like, or that Shota Umino wins the title, if I'm honest.
Because
Tsuji's more likely.
Because Mox is facing Narita. And right. Then, like, I guess ideally, like, it's sort of like, oh, you're going to get, like, Mox and Shota. But I'm still just sort of like, well, Tsuji just lost. So he's not going to get, like, another title shot right away after winning New Japan Cup. And we're still a few months away from G1. So it's like, what do we do at Dominion, assuming Mox still has the title? I feel like it's just kind of weird. Are we in it for, like, sort of a long haulish run with Moxley? I'm really confused by this.
Yeah. Well, and you know what you did there is you jumped to the gun, because you said, you know, Moxley Narita, but we don't know, right? And that's been the topic of the day, because the people who are very committed to New Japan as, you know, an alternative to WWE or to Western wrestling, I'll say, in general, are up in arms and very upset about John Moxley versus Powerhouse Hobbs coming up this Wednesday on Dynamite is for the IWGP title, right? Realistically, obviously, not a very good chance that Hobbs wins. But, you know, again, I see people upset about it and how goofy it looks. That stuff is, like, so weird to me. I'm just like, just because that's the way that New Japan, like, historically has booked their stuff, where they don't announce title matches in between title matches already announced, that doesn't necessarily make that the only way to do it. And the people who kind of feel like are overreacting about it are just kind of, I feel like they're just really grasping at straws for something to complain about, you know?
Yeah. And also, like, Hobbs has been pushed, like, pretty hard this year. And, right. Like, who's to, like, because it's happening this one time after Mox just wins the title, it's, like, assuming that this is going to continue happening.
And, I mean, it's really, like, does it matter?
Does it really all that matter all that much? Because ultimately, like, when the belt is put back on a New Japan show, or when the belt goes back to Japan, it's like, are we really acting like the belt is going to be that devalued because he had a defense versus Powerhouse Hobbs, or I don't know, fucking, like, freshly healed Trent Beretta or some shit? Like, I don't right. think, like, I don't think that's that big of a deal.
Yeah, I don't see the complaint at all. Again, oh no, oh, they should, the graphic should say the winner of, you know, Moxley versus Hobbs faces the winner of Narita versus Tsuji, you know, whatever. I'm like, this shit is not that hard. Like, it's not that weird. It's not that crazy. Gabe used to do that shit all the time for Evolve, right? It would be like, the winner of the title match on night one is going to wrestle this person on night two of a, you know, a double shot weekend or whatever. Oh my God, I cannot believe I said double shot when it's not. Yeah, anyways, of a, you know, a two show weekend. You know, it's just so weird that people are like up and it's a thing that I know that you don't actually care about, but you're like acting like because they're breaking the rules, you know, in quotation marks, for a person who's an AEW wrestler, then like you have an excuse to be upset about it. It's just, yeah, again, I think it's very goofy. And as you said, Hobbs has been pushed strong and he's been like made to feel important, so much so that I even mentioned it, that I thought it was weird that it felt like, to my taste, to my opinion, when they did the Ospreay taking on the Callis family people, it felt like they went in reverse order, right? But I kind of like got, not only did I get kind of like, you know, told by other people who didn't agree with me, but I also like had to think about it in the context of, yeah, like that's the way that AEW presented it. AEW intentionally, TK presented it that it was like in order of building to the bigger opponent for Ospreay, it was, you know, Soup, Fletcher, Hobbs, and that was meant to be clear to set up that delineation, you know what I mean, that like Hobbs was at the top of the pecking order for the Don Callis family. He's at least supposed to be seen as the strongest threat, right? The one who's, he's just this unstoppable force who can just smash people,
right? Like, there's at least different reasons, like, Like they did a lot with like the hyping up Takeshita stuff, and I feel like realistically, I still think he like has the most plans for him. But I think like at the in the current pecking order, like Hobbs is very much clearly above Fletcher at the very least. So like having him go against like you know, having him kind of like be like the last build up at the very least is like, even if he isn't like the hardest pushed one, is he's pushed as the biggest threat.
Yes. Yeah, exactly what I kind of meant there by what I was. Yeah. So yes, I think we're on the same page on that. Azumi Vakir, definitely check it out. Vakir rocks, dude. I think that Stephanie Vakir is really good.
Like, she's very good.
Yeah. She is just fantastic. And Azumi is really good too. I personally said on this match, and I got a little bit of pushback, I think probably in the Discord, Violent People Discord, everyone go join it. Get in there and get some real chatter, talk to some real heads. That this felt like the most that Azumi has been positioned as just being like a mainstream act and one of the top like wrestlers, and not like a high speed wrestler who's getting shots at the regular titles, if that makes sense. I really felt like this was the most that she's really kind of came into being able to feel special, but not feel like she has to still be a high speed wrestler who's wrestling like regular matches. So I did really appreciate that. And I mean, this was really over with a lot of people, and it opened a lot of people's eyes. And Azumi was incredibly over to the point where, yeah, like she's continued to get really great reactions on AEW even recently. So, I mean, me and you, Jay, obviously, I was going to say Alex, but I don't think Alex even follows Stardom like that. But, you know, the three of us and other people within our, you know, OOV have all been high on Azumi this whole time. But I do think it's a bit of a coming out party where more people in like mainstream people are seeing her and really seeing what she's got there. And she has a charisma that I think is, you know, not easy to overlook.
Yeah, I plan on going back to watch that. Azumi is good. Sure. As far as like people who from Stardom, I think have the best chance of getting over if we are to see more Stardom people coming over and all that stuff. Just on like a letting Azumi go out there and wrestle, I feel like she would get over pretty quickly. If you just throw something like Queen Aminata versus Azumi on Collision or some shit, like
right.
I feel like people are like, oh shit, like yeah, Azumi and Queen Aminata are both really good.
yeah, for sure. Did you watch Makabe versus Zack Sabre Jr.?
Of course.
Why did I say it like that? Makabe. Have you heard of this? Have you heard of this Makabe guy? Makabe. I actually, I can't remember what I went back and I was watching an old match. It was Judas Icarus versus Makabe, their first match against each other on, I don't know if it was 365, but I do know that it was on the island. It might have been.
I feel like it was 365.
Yeah, and the commentator called him Makabe. Anyway, okay, before we talk about that then, because we both saw that, I'm going to mention a few more things that only I saw, I assume you didn't watch anything from the Revolution Rumble, the Rev Pro Revolution Rumble.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Rev Pro did the Revolution Rumble, and they acted like this is a thing, which I found that very funny. It was announced as if like it was, you know, like, oh yeah, you know, this is our whatever, Revolution Rumble. And I'm like, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about. I am not familiar with a Revolution Rumble, right? Like, that's just not a thing as far as I'm concerned, but they were acting as if they've done it. I'm like vamping as if I was going to look up how many they've done before, and then I decided in the middle of saying this that I just will. This is the third one, I guess.
Hold on.
Yeah.
There's a 24-minute Oku versus Leighton Buzzard match?
Okay, I did not watch that, but that sounds impenetrably bad, right? That sounds just like...
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Miserable. Yeah, they are...
Oh, God.
Having Oku... I think this is almost like... This is low-scale political hit theory on Oku. It almost feels like someone's intentionally setting this guy up to fail. But it's almost impossible for him to fail. Because for some reason, people are just going to pretend like he's good, I guess.
They're gonna keep pretending that he's good. I'm just... Holy shit, man.
It's fucking brutal.
I'll probably watch Luke and Connor. And Grizzly Young Vets versus Subculture, that sounds like it could be pretty good.
That's probably solid. I skipped that so that I could watch the women's dog collar match because I just wanted to see. It was too long, but it was interesting, especially like to compare it to something like the Demus and Mad Dog Connolly dog collar match that just happened, which, you know, was obviously much shorter and felt like it could have gone longer. This was, you know, longer and felt like it could have gone shorter. But it was like a kind of a different version of the story, like, of doing a dog collar, and it was unique, and they did a really good job. Like, you can watch people do something like a dog collar and they'll get themselves really confused about like the logistics of the chain. They did a really good job of doing a lot of neat little crisscross, you know, wind the chain around the ring post, wind the chain around the ropes, wind the chain around chairs, other things, even around each other. And still like not get confused, make the stuff work and move through it like seamlessly to where it didn't feel awkward. So I will say that that was solid, but yeah, like I said, just went too long. And a lot of that is comparing it to something that was just so quick and snappy and just like felt like incredibly violent. Slater versus Alexander was fine, but it was not the best Slater nor the best Alexander thing I've seen. And Jacobs Connor was really good. Connor, I can't tell what the fuck they're doing with Connor Mills now. Because he was the top heel in the company, the most hated, everyone can't stand him. And now it really feels like they're kind of presenting him almost as like a hardworking baby face underneath. I don't know if I just missed a ton of storyline, but it feels like they just kind of switched it out of nowhere to where he's not full baby face, but he's kind of tweener leaning baby face based on like, oh, he works so hard and this and that. That said, the match was really good and it told a story of kind of building that up, and it went, you know, relatively long, and especially you got to play off of that then leading into the Rumble to say, well, these guys beat the piss out of each other for nearly 20 minutes. What's that? How's that going to vote for them now going into the Rumble? And then, you know, spoiler, this one I don't mind spoiling. Luke Jacobs wins the Rumble, so that even helps to put him over. I did not watch the Rumble, but I do.
I would hope you didn't.
Yeah, but I can predict, you know, I can easily predict and tell you that that was the story. Jacobs had a long, hard fight at the beginning of the show and then somehow comes back and goes through this, you know, the Rumble and still wins.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Because I'm assuming this the winner of this would receive some sort of title shot. I'm assuming that'd be the purpose of this. Yes.
You would think.
Over under on Jacobs versus Oku going 35 minutes.
Ooh. Fuck. I'm going to say over. I'm going to say over.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that Luke, as good as he is, and as much as I like Luke Jacobs, I don't think he's going to be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be able to go that long. Yeah.
That's a very daunting task.
Yeah. Not a lot can pull it off. Not a lot can pull it off. Chris Hero's mixtape. Unfortunately, you did not get to see all of it. Unfortunately, I did sit through all of it in person. Not, you know, in hindsight, not a bad show. In fact, probably a lot more easily watchable on VOD than it was in person. Here's the deal. The thing started nearly an hour late from when it was supposed to start, right? And then it had an incredibly long battle royal followed by an incredibly long intermission. And that just absolutely zonked the just the energy, the vibe, everything. The second half, after, by the time you're kind of like midway through Hero and Higuchi and then the tornado tag afterwards, like half the crowd had left the building, and we're getting to the point where you're thinking like, okay, they must have cut a match, and then they still do the three-way as the last match. It was fucking crazy, because yeah, it felt like, you know, like a main event, like WWE, like the old main event shows where like the actual main event would be the first match and then everything else is like,
yeah, you know,
the rest, and people would just leave. Like it was nuts that they did it that way. The opening six man was really good until the finish, and it was funny because I totally saw it coming and didn't really think much of it, but at one point the referee, I can tell, is getting something in his earpiece, and he goes around to explain to everyone, I think that they're probably like, you guys need to go home early, they're cutting time because they started the show late, right? But I guess they didn't go home early enough, because eventually the ref just counts three on a kickout, and you can see from the reaction, because Hall of Wicked gets pinned, Jigsaw is ready to dive in and do the next spots. He breaks up the pin. He's on his knees. He's ready to jump into the next spots. And the ref is like, no, it's over. And he's just waving it off. And then he goes down to whisper into Holly Wicked's ear. I can tell that he's probably telling him, hey, they told us to just go home. He goes and does the same thing to Jigsaw. And you can see Matt Mikowski, who's on the outside at the time, and he's watching. Then he throws his hands up in the air and he just walks to the back all pissed off, which you could say, okay, he's selling the loss. But in the moment, it seemed a lot more like confusion and frustration than it did like, you know, selling the actual, oh, we lost the match. It was good until that, you know, and even then I was like, they could have gone home. It was fine. But the fact that like they left it the way that they did, I really think that kind of just made the match not feel as great coming out of it. So that was, yeah, that was funny. They did a women's three-way that was supposed to be a tag. They played off of like, oh, this was supposed to be a tag a little bit. But again, it's a Rachel Ellering match. So, you know,
yeah,
I don't think I need to say anything else. There's just like a pretty much straight up West Coast Pro Trios match. The real story of this match was just that Los Suavecitos are incredibly over in Los Angeles as babyfaces, even though they're kind of thought of as natural heels, kind of across, you know, in other places for the most part. But here, because you're kind of doing, you know, South versus North West Coast rivalry, here the crowd was behind them, and it did kind of throw off the dynamics of the match to me personally, but I couldn't help but like be like entertained and thinking that that it was infectious the way that the crowd responded to everything, because people were just so very hot and entertained by what was going on. Uni El Benedito is a guy that I've talked shit about before because he botches a ton and is absolutely like just trying shit that he can't handle and shouldn't be doing. And seeing him in person did not change my mind, but it did make me realize that he's absolutely massive and he can hit some really beast looking power spots, and he should just stick to that instead of trying to fly, and he would be like actually over and cool. So that was a nice eye opener there. Gumbo Rumble was cool. Beef wins it. Beef was ended up the most over guy. It helped that there was a bunch of really drunk people that got into the fact that they called him White Trash Wonderful as his nickname. So they just kept chanting White Trash, and that helped because the rest of the crowd was like, yeah, let's all support Beef. And these guys were just trying to be funny. They almost took a turn to being the negative, because you know how Beef has that big, like kind of crazy looking eagle chest tattoo. The yeah. crowd did, those guys that were really drunk and chanting White Trash did start to try to reference like that he was a Nazi and that it was like, a Nazi related tattoo. So that wasn't fun, because I'm like, hey, shut the fuck up. So I yelled at them like, hey, shut the fuck up. You know, Beef is a cool dude. I like Beef. It's not just that he's, you know, a MUFO, but I also think he's a good wrestler. And they almost ruined it, the fun that everyone was having. But then Beef wins it, and it's, you know, felt good. Then we get to the match that you actually saw. So Quentin, Chris Hero versus Kazusada Higuchi. What did you think?
It's good. I feel like sometimes now watching Hero, I feel like I have to do better at tempering my expectations, because while I think it was really good, it's Chris Hero and Kazusada Higuchi. So in my head, I'm like, oh man, this should like be like really fucking great. And it's good. I'd even call it very good, but it's definitely something that's still like a victim of my expectations, just when I hear like Chris Hero's name put into something. So I like the way that they did it. It's a more of a fun match than kind of like anything of like really substance to it, which is fine, because those guys can do that. Those guys can go out there and just be the dudes that beat the shit out of each other, and they can still make a compelling match out of that. So it's still good for those reasons, because they're just immensely talented at wrestling. And then whatever that finish is like, oh, okay, well, never mind. But it's Hero and Higuchi. So like the floor for that match is really high, even if it doesn't get to like the levels that you would wish in your head. And like, I'm a victim of this. Like, I feel like I have to like adjust. Like, hey, it's 2024 Hero. Like, it's just gotta relax.
Yeah, that's it. And I do think I appreciated seeing like Joseph and his rating of it, saying like, from the bell to the, you know, to the ref stoppage, you know, the ref knockout, whatever, the DQ, like, you know, that's the match and that's really good. And it is. It sucks to be like, oh, it's a no contest. But, you know, at the same time, I try to be pretty open to that kind of stuff and say, like, hey, you know what? Like, it's really stupid to let a finish color your opinion of something. Personally, I think that that's dumb, especially when it's like all you're doing, like, especially if it's a good finish, but you're just sour grapes because the wrong person won. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, I think really stupid and kind of like, that's just like baby stuff that you should be over with at this point. If you're an adult who's still watching wrestling, it's also fine. If that's your thing, that's cool. If you just want to root for the guys that you want to win and everything, like, that's okay. But I just think that, like, those opinions are kind of, you know, tougher for me to really care about. So yeah, like, in the moment, was I disappointed? Yeah, because we were getting into a really good match. I was fucking fired up. I was enjoying myself. And then it's like, oh my God, I can tell exactly what's happening. And it's like, okay, this is the 2023 Chris Hero special. He's going to have almost a match, end it, and then turn it into a tag team match because he, I guess, feels like he can't go. I don't know if there's a possibility that part of why this happened this way was, again, because of trying to shave time because they started late. They're trying to cut time. So, hey, let's just combine these two into one. We can save some time in the middle. We can have some fun. We can do some stupid stuff. Or if this was the plan all along, right? I don't know. The main event, I guess I should say that, you know, the Yaveo Masterclass 2 out of 3 falls, it also felt like it went really quick. You know, each fall was about 5 minutes, right? So that's like pretty fast for something like that. And you could say, like, oh, you know, a lot of, you know, Lucha Libre 2 out of 3 falls matches, the first two falls go quick, but usually the last fall will go longer. But this one, it was like all three falls were about 5 minutes. It was a 15-minute match, and you kind of went 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, boom, right? So that really did feel like they were trying to rush through. So I was kind of like, okay, we're already like an hour and a half past the time that the club had sent an email out saying the show was going to be over. It seems like they're rushing through. So I could see that maybe was what they did here, because they're like, eh, Brian Keith versus Mecha Mummy. Were people really like losing their mind for that match? I don't think they're going to be upset if we end up making that into a tag team match. Did you watch the tag team match?
Nah, I couldn't. Like, only saw Hero, okay. And yeah,
okay. I couldn't stop laughing. Like, I really, and not just like in a like, oh, this is funny, but also in a like, this is so funny because like this was a dream match specifically for me in person. I was so excited, and then this is what it's turned into. But it was, you know, it was executed fine. They played off the history with the Mecha Mummy. They, you know, did the water spot, all that stuff. So, yeah, I was like, okay, cool. You know, whatever. They did it. I'll recommend checking out the Angelico and Arez 2 out of 3 falls match. You know, like, Angelico is not my guy, but this is my kind of match. He's fine in this. Arez, I think, is great, and I like seeing Arez doing something like this because he doesn't do it a ton. And he was really good. So yeah, I definitely recommend it. And the main event was like, damn, the main event easily could have been the main event if there had been a full crowd there still. And if it wasn't happening as late as it was, like, it rocked. Zoe, Fox, and Kincaid are all really good. Kincaid is about as good as anybody out there, really. Like, it's crazy that he doesn't get booked as like he used to and no one pays attention to him because he's fantastic. I mean, AR Fox is AR Fox. The motherfucker didn't care. Like, you couldn't tell. If you just watched AR Fox performance, you would not know that half the crowd was gone. Because AR Fox does not wrestle. He only knows how to wrestle at one speed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he absolutely fucking went nuts. And Zoe is Zoe. Zoe's on a tear. Zoe wrestles every match like he's got something to prove. And he kind of does. Like, even though I've been high on him for a while, and I think it's starting to spread, I'm hearing more and more people say the same thing. More and more people are noticing and taking attention. But it's not the big, you know, mainstream. We're not hearing about him on, like, you know, Voices of Wrestling or whatever. They're not taking credit for being the first person to think Alpha Zoe is good like they are for Jack Morris, right? Like, Zoe is, like, still under the radar. He does have something to prove. And he's proving it with a match like this where he's in there with two guys. Kincaid hit a bunch of nutty spots but also was doing the character work. Fox is fucking crazy and still does shit that people half his age can't even do. And cleaner than you've ever seen. Like, that's one of the crazy things about, like, the Fox and Top Flight team. Because at this point right now, we're kind of, like, iffy. Because Top Flight can hit some cool stuff. But now they're, like, shaky. They're not as solid as they are. And it's like, damn. Like, this is where you kind of start to separate the boys from the men. Because they've had injuries. They've had timeout. They've had all this stuff. And they're not looking as snappy and as fresh as they had before. And Fox looks just as snappy, just as fresh. He can hit the spots just as clean as he did 15 years ago. At this point, I mean, when you really think about how long this guy's been doing this shit.
He genuinely hasn't aged, like, at all. Like, he's one of those guys that's, like, a real genuine freak physically. Like, up, like, genuinely up there with, like, Claudio, honestly. Instead of just, like, the type of freak that he is this late into the game.
Yeah, the fact that, yeah, like I said, 15 years of this guy executing these spots at this level, still, constantly. And he hasn't, a lot of guys take shit out of their repertoire, right? They, oh, I can't, you know, can't do everything anymore that I used to do. Nah, I mean, he's still doing everything.
We've seen Ospreay do that. Like, Ospreay very much doesn't do a lot of the things he used to.
No, Ospreay's cutting it back. Yeah, it's a very unique individual, AR Fox. I don't know if you want to say anything else about the hero thing. I just snapped through it real fast, you know.
I guess it's fine. I guess you started to mention it, so we should talk prestige.
Yes. That's what I was gonna jump to.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to go back for Ali Blackwood. And I do want to go back for that one because I just want to see what Ali could do there. I could wind up not liking it. I just want to give Ali the chance because I trust him so much. So I want to go back for that. So I only wound up seeing Miyu Yamashita versus Kylie Rae and Makabe versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah. The only other match then that I saw that you didn't, because I only watched the top four that I would even talk about, would be like Suzuki Akira. And it was just disappointing.
I had that on in the background, but not enough to like say that I watched it.
Sure.
Because I was like, after I've just watched it, I'm like, oh yeah, Akira just is not really good at this. So I just went on with waiting until, well, I tried to stay up to watch the show, and then it just went really fucking long for where I'm at in the world.
Yeah.
So eventually I went to sleep, but I Suzuki and Akira made me give up for sure.
Yeah, I had just walked home from the Chris Hero's mixtape. Like I said, that was already going late, and I got in the door, and I think that Ali Blackwood was going on, but it was raining. I had just walked, like, you know, it was a 15-minute walk. It's not terrible, but still. So I was like, I'm going to take a shower. You know, I don't really care that much to see this match right this moment. I haven't gone back to check it out. Leo Rush and Jaden is on, they just posted it online for free. I don't know if it's on YouTube, but they tweeted it out. Maybe it's on Twitter. Maybe it's on YouTube, but you can watch that match. I've seen the clips, and it's enough for me because this was Blackheart special, right? And
I'm cool on that.
I think me and you both have been a fan of Leo Rush to different degrees over the years, right? But I've never been a fan of the Blackheart thing. Even early on when it was very subdued, I thought it was goofy.
Yeah. Even when he did it with Janela and CZW, I wasn't into it.
Yeah, it was just like, God, I don't need this. And it's even worse now, it seems. He did do a really cool spot that I saw a clip of where he ran on his, like, on all four, if he looked like a gazelle or something. That looked really cool. I would definitely say he should keep doing that. It didn't look awkward and weird at all. Miyu and Kylie Rae, that was a fucking corker, man. I thought that Miyu beat the shit out of her. Kylie, I wanted to hate Kylie after like everything, but I think she still got it, man. It sucks because
Kylie's still really good. I don't know if you've been watching any of her freelance stuff this year. I know I'm kind of like a couple matches behind on freelance for her, but the Isaias match, she was a surprise, and then her versus then there's a Saban Gage match. No, Kylie's good. She's still very good.
Yeah, I want to be able to just check out because it's like, oh, she's never going to do anything. She's already kind of burned too many bridges. You know, she's had a lot of ups and downs with mental health, which that's not her fault or anything, but it's just, that's tough, you know, and that can really, you know, set back your career. She's had a baby, but damn if she's not still a good wrestler, man. She's just such a natural baby face. Yeah.
But even then, like, what made it cool was, like, the fact that obviously, Kylie in Chicago, she's always gonna be a baby face. But like, I like the fact that Kylie, when she's everywhere else, she can like turn that shtick into something else. So she kind of like starts back, like going back and forth with the crowd in a heelish way. And it kind of like sets up where Yamashita is the baby face because Kylie is being so fucking annoying. And I thought that was a very good way to flip that. Because I feel like Miyu and Kylie match up and very, very well. And like, if you wanted to do like Yamashita just kicks Kylie's ass because Yamashita's in control and you want to like Kylie to fight from underneath, that works perfectly. If you want to like have like Miyu be like this all world badass ass kicker that you want to see like rip Kylie to shreds because Kylie is being so annoying, that works too. So that the latter is what they went for, and I thought they did a very good job with that.
Yeah. The evil Kylie stuff, she's kind of, you've seen pieces of it here and there, like in Black Label Pro and stuff like that over the years. But yeah, like obviously freelance, there's no way for her not to be, you know, the most lovable baby face. But yeah, this was phenomenal. I want to just write her off so I can just stop paying attention, but unfortunately I can't.
She's still good.
She's still just too good to drop completely off the radar. There was the Bullet Club War Dogs versus C420 6-man match. It was what you'd expect from the War Dogs at this point.
My one wish list thing is because these two were kind of like ships passing in the night in terms of like their freelance runs, we got to get Ali and Kylie. That is a must. But like, as long as Ali is still doing indie work, and as long as Kylie is still like in a mental space where she wants to wrestle, like I need Ali and Kylie. I need it.
Yeah, no, we could definitely get that. It'll be, again, like I said, I think it could play off of some of the stuff that happened in the match already. It could play off the idea that, like, even though Ali was a natural babyface for his first match back, that you want him to go heel because that's what he's doing. So you could definitely work that and make it happen, and it would be really good because, yeah, she kind of, in a lot of ways, kind of took up the mantle for Ali when he left. It was like Ali was the number one babyface. He's gone, and it wasn't like immediate, but pretty soon after, Kylie was like, okay, this is now the new baby face, right? For freelance. So yeah, as you said, it is that kind of ships passing in the night. It's like the two top baby faces of the company. We could finally have that. The 6-man, whatever, it doesn't matter. It was, you know, again, War Dogs, I like them. The War Dogs are so tough because I like them. I like all of them, not even just these three, but the rest of the group. But it's just missing something. It feels, I hate to, you know, say the kind of the trope, but it's like, it feels a little cosplay, you know, that sometimes they hit it right and the stuff is entertaining. And sometimes it's a little bit, you know, playing wrestler. So whatever. And then, you know, Cody Chen is awesome. Guillermo Rosas is awesome. Sonico is Sonico at this point, which is sad because he was a guy that, you know, at least was entertaining for a long time, but it's just, yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know what the move is for Sonico. Main event, Daniel Makabe versus Zack Sabre Jr. A dream match that I don't think either of us ever anticipated. I know Dan never saw coming. It was so funny. Jordan Castle on commentary, he says, Daniel Makabe, you know, took a plane flight all the way down to Los Angeles to see Zack Sabre Jr. wrestle, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, you know, kind of. And then I'm like, oh, I was at that show too. That's very funny. I was in the building at the night that Daniel Makabe, you know, flew all the way down just to see Zach wrestle. But But you know, Jordan obviously is not a good commentator. But just wanted to talk about that. But
we're gonna talk more about that.
Yeah. Feel free. Let's tell me about this main event. What were your thoughts? Again, I've. Feel like I've had so much to say and you've had so little opportunities. I want you to take the crack at this one.
So obviously Dan and Zach is like up there for my personal dream matches over the last 10 years or whatever, right? And I'm so happy and over the moon that this match happened. And this match is good and I like it. Now I will say that there's like things about it that I felt like there was a more interesting version of this match that we didn't get, but like, we'll get to that. This is genuinely, like, in terms of the spot, position, everything like this. Because when people talk about, like, when someone says, oh, this is the worst match ever, and they say, like, Charmel versus Jenna Maraska, I'm like, oh, well, like, what did you expect, right? When I think of the worst match ever, I think of something with two wrestlers I believe to be competent or should be competent going out there and having something dog shit awful. So I think of shit that is really bad to me. I think of Dean Ambrose versus Chris Jericho. I think of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tommaso Ciampa, 2 or 3 falls. Like, I think of stuff like that. But, like, there are supposedly competent wrestlers in this ring, but for some reason, this is one of the worst things I've seen all year. I'm supposed to believe that this man is competent, right? I'm supposed to believe this. He commentate. He has, like, some sort of New Japan gig and all this stuff and how young he is and all.
Yeah.
Brian Zane, right? Brian Zane, too? He's the other guy?
Yeah.
This is genuinely some of the worst commentary I've ever heard on a main event match ever in indie wrestling.
I know.
Genuinely. And there's so many different angles that if you're a commentator, you could have taken when approaching this match. You could have said, Daniel Makabe has wrestled Jonathan Gresham and Timothy Thatcher and Negro Navarro, that Zack Sabre Jr. is maybe the last person on the sort of like maestro level technician list for Makabe to check off. That Makabe has wins over these people. So that, hey, people might not know Makabe to the extent of which they know Zack Sabre Jr., but don't sleep on Makabe because he has wins over some of like these really well known wrestlers. That's an angle, right? I would think that makes perfect sense to do. But instead, Dan Makabe is a fucking Make-A-Wish kid. They're like, oh man, in his last year of wrestling, here we are, Zack Sabre Jr. Coming down to face this guy who idolizes him, Daniel Makabe. And it's like, why is that the angle you're taking? Why is that the angle that you're taking for your main event fucking match? I don't get it. For a guy that's been wrestling longer than Zack Sabre Jr., like, I really don't understand it, right? And, like, the most I can understand is maybe, I watch enough Dan. Is Dan maybe a tad bit, little bit influenced by Zack Sabre Jr.? A tad? Maybe? A smidge? I don't know. It's possible. It's definitely possible. Do I feel like maybe Zach kind of, like, could have been like, oh, maybe, like, if this sort of wrestling is popular, maybe, like, that opens the window for, like, something for, like, what I like to do could get over. At, like, maybe, right? I feel like that is, like, that is the most you could possibly say. That is the most you could possibly say. But how fucking... This guy is the main event of the show. He's in the main event of the show. And you're making it seem like a fucking charity case that he's getting to wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. instead of, hey, he's wrestled all these other super talented guys and beaten them. You might not know him, but he's actually just as good as Zack Sabre Jr. That should be the story. That should be the story. But instead, I get some of the worst shit I've ever heard on a main event of an indie show. And I've heard really bad shit. I've sat through fucking the worst AAW commentary. I've sat through really bad shit. This is embarrassing. They should be ashamed of themselves for how much they butchered this match. Because even though I have other issues separate from the commentary with the match, this is a bit like, this is like hard to like not have in your, it's hard to not think about it as this match is happening. It's hard to not have it resonate, like reverberating in your brain as you're trying to watch the match, because I'm watching this guy that I know is one of the best wrestlers in the world get made up to be some fucking charity case. It's the worst shit I've heard all year. They should be ashamed of themselves.
It's so brutal, and it's even tougher in the context because it is prestige and it does have this history of just, I've always felt like they haven't treated Dan the way that they should. You know, they haven't, I mean, obviously he hasn't worked there a ton. And that's almost even part of the fucking problem. It's like, if you guys respect him as much as it seems like you do, based on the way that you book him, like, why don't you book him more often? Why don't you use him, you know, more regularly? And then it's like, okay, let's not even fucking just talk about that, you know, historically, but let's talk about, like, leading into this. Because, you know, the previous show, when Dan is booked against, you know, G Sharp, like, the commentary kind of was doing the same thing. And I can understand the commentary. They're trying to build up the hype and set you up for the idea that, like, this is a really important match coming up. So Dan is, like, focused or at least thinking about Sabre. But, like, they could have fucking said something. I mean, if I was them and the promo, I don't know if you saw the promo that Gregory Sharp sent in about the match, but I would have, like, told him to fucking delete it, remove it, don't post that shit, because he was, like, trying to almost seem like he's trying to book his own fucking angle and talk about, like, oh, I deserve the match with Sabre and you don't. I'm going to beat you and take that match. And it's like, brother, like, you should be talking about fucking Dan and putting him over, especially because you're going to lose.
Say, hey, I know you got this match coming up, but don't overlook me. So,
right. That should be your conversation, man. Your conversation shouldn't be like, I'm overlooking you and I want your spot. I want to wrestle with Sabre. Like, I get that. You can even say, I want your spot, sure. But you're, like, putting it out like fucking, you know, and it's just, again, it's the same company where it's just like, you guys, I know that you get it. You booked Sabre against Dan in the main event of this show for a reason. You know that he's the guy to deliver this match, right? So why do you, like, why do you not treat him with the respect he deserves? Right? Why do you, again, like, the tell the fucking commentary, again, the stuff that you're saying, like, get it in their head. But I can also see the other side of it. Okay, what are the chances that Daniel Makabe retires in July? What are the chances that he really comes back to Prestige all that often? Okay, not very good if he's going to be retired. What are the chances that Sabre come back? Well, also not very good, but he's not retired, so it's possible. Right? So I get kind of being like, well, we should make Sabre a big deal because we could actually book him again. We're not likely to book Dan anymore. Right? So I can kind of see that. But you still, I mean, you really should be fucking telling the story. Just the natural story is the stuff that you're saying. The way that they presented it, the way they talked about this, was the way that you tell the story of the first Dan versus Thatcher match. Right? Like, that, the commentary that they gave would have made sense.
Which was seven fucking years ago. It was seven right. fucking years ago.
And Makabe won the match. Oh, right? Like, the whole point is, like, oh, no. But if he's going to lose, you can't also tell the story that he's just in. Oh, he's just in there and it's a special lucky night for him. It's, you know, make a wish kid who gets to have his dream match up. Like, and then he's going to lose. That doesn't really look good. That doesn't really look good for him. So, yeah, it's just all around, that's very rough. That is,
fuck, it pissed tough. Me off so goddamn bad. Because yeah. It's like, it's part of the whole presentation of like a wrestling product. It's part of the whole thing. Like, you are relying on these guys to help drive the narrative and drive the story. If this match had no commentary, oh my God, I probably would like it so much more. I probably would like it so much more if they just, like, had no commentary on it. But I have to hear these fucks just completely fumble this match with, like, the most basic story that you could possibly tell. Like, people that should be familiar with Dan enough to be able to tell that story too. Like, I don't know why that was more interesting to them. You can mention Dan retiring and this kind of, like, being a bucket list match for him if you want to do that, but, like, still mention other stuff. Like, there's ways to do it. They just, oh my God, dude, that shit pissed me off so bad when I watch that match.
Right. And, you know, on top of that, they blew, I wouldn't say, like, completely blew, but, you know, they blow some calls on some moves, they blow some calls on some counters, on some, like, history, some references, stuff like that, a little bit here and there, you know, whatever. So it is kind of like, you could say, okay, you know, at least they know their stuff, right? and they just kind of maybe took the wrong path on the story that they're telling, but you don't even get that. You just kind of get a like kind of like missed everything. I mean, they're not like absolutely atrocious, just like don't know what the fuck they're talking about completely. But you know, it's I'm kind of like I'm just grasping at straws to try to make a case for you, and you it's like harder and harder to want to defend somebody who like you know misses some just basic stuff when it comes to like technique and like I said references and history that you could like you know pull off. Not that there's a ton there, and that's another part of this that kind of stinks because jumping over to the match, one thing as you kind of started talking about it that I did think that did cross my mind. I'd love to hear your thoughts on like the actual nuts and bolts of the in-ring wrestling is that this match feels like the first match in a series, and unfortunately it's not, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would love to like kind of have you expound on that as well.
To me, even with the match itself, it's Dan and Zack Sabre Jr. So it's impossible for it to not be like a very good match. But I feel like you can correct, like you can disagree with me on this. I feel like they went more with like sort of like the dream match approach to it. And I feel like those two guys are like much more interesting than that. And like, though I understand the circumstances of it, and I feel like it is a dream match, big match, that sort of thing. Do stuff that would like be more catered to like the environment in which you're in and everything. It feels like they went more for like the dream match thing. And that's just like less so what I find myself interested in as much these days. And like, dream match is still relative like to the style in which these guys work, but with as much Zach as I've watched and as much Dan as I've watched, I know that there's like probably more interesting approaches and ways that those two guys can like think of and lay out a match. And for whatever the reasons were, like the environment, the spot, what they were trying to accomplish, everything, it just doesn't do those sort of things. Well, so while it's good, I'm also left thinking, ah, man, like, I really wish that we could have gotten this match like 6 years ago or 7 years ago, 5 years ago, because I feel like in a different environment, different time, different circumstances, maybe with like more wiggle room to kind of revisit this, to revisit the matchup, that we could get something that's even better. So I understand like why it's worked the way that it is. I'm not mad at it. I'm not upset with it. And I still like the match. I just, because I know both of these guys and like feel like I feel like there's something better there. And I feel like because it's Prestige and what Prestige offers, but like they went for more of the dream match thing. That was how I felt about it.
Yeah, and there's even, you know, but what do they say? Like you hit your friends harder or whatever. I'm like, I love Daniel Makabe, obviously. I think he's one of the greatest wrestlers alive today. I don't need to fucking hedge my bets. There's moments in here where he's like, you can tell that he's slightly uncomfortable, that he's kind of trying, doing a little wink and nod, kind of aw shucks thing. When the best Dan stuff is you kind of get that killer instinct and you just are not necessarily getting that here. And again, as we said, as like kind of I think we both agree that this feels like a good setting the table match. And you even saw a little bit of that in the again the I reference it the first Dan and Thatcher match. But then they played upon it deeper and deeper to the points where there was the comfortability. And there was the aggression and there was the violence. But there's times in here where I really would have liked to see Makabe and, you know, for that matter, Zach, because Zach is another one who can do that, where you can see, like, okay, if he was wrestling Hiro, if he was wrestling Walter, if he was wrestling, you know, those are the first two that come to my mind. Maybe, you know, I don't even want to say the guy's name, but you know, his old tag team partners, it was the short little fucker.
Of course.
They never had that dynamic, which I do think kind of speaks to something weird there, where it's like you would never see the saber turn it up and get violent, right? That you could see later with other wrestlers, and especially when he was comfortable with them. And like Dan has done the same thing over the years. Like you can tell when he's trying to show off and do the technical wrestling grappling stuff, and it makes sense in the first match, but he doesn't really turn up the violence, right? And doesn't really turn up the aggression. And at times where he should have just gone for a big fucking elbow strike or really dug a, even something as stupid as, you know, digging a knuckle into someone's like ribs or something, he kind of doesn't. And especially like the biggest one to me is they're kind of all tied up. They, I think they both have like kind of like variations on heel hooks and this and that. And they're really just like laced into each other, but both of them have their arms free and they're kind of just standing there. And Dan is just kind of doing the like, you know, like, yeah, what are you going to do? Like putting his arms up kind of thing. And it's just like, yeah, in that moment, and just like kind of pulling a goofy face. And it's like, in that moment, no, you should punch him in the fucking mouth. Right? Like that would be the killer instinct Makabe that I want to see. And that was the issue here, where yes, like 2, 3, 4 matches between these guys, then we'll get into it. Then we'll see it. Then we'll actually, you know, see that aggression and that violence come through. That'll just be like that
or even that, if I want to like separate it from an idea of like a series, right? Because maybe that's not as realistic. But like even just something that was more pronounced in establishing like who the character of the match is now, kind of like, so now, well, granted, like I would say that, would you say that Dan as a baby face is probably better than Zach as a baby face, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
So like, and again, like the circumstances, the environment, all that stuff, like I would think maybe we should lean into like Zach being a dick more, but
for sure, yeah.
But we didn't really get that. Like nothing really got turned up. So you got like the idea of like the typical touring match where they roll around and do whatever, and then eventually Zach gets frustrated and go ahead and hits a European uppercut, and then that's really about where it stays for like that sort of like aggression and nastiness. And so even beyond the idea of, oh, this will be better as a series of matches, I just feel like even just the work in the match of like, dang, like why? I don't know. Like I'm like I've seen like I know these guys. I've seen them wrestle like so many times. I like am damn near like the Zack Saber Jr. authority still on a lot of stuff. Right. Like right. I'm like, huh? Like what's like what happened here? Like I understand that he's more of like that tweener sort of guy now with TMDK, but where's that bite? Where's that nastiness? Like I know that that's there. I've watched you for so many years. I know that that's there. Like, how come it's not here now? And that goes to like sort of like the dream match thing for me. It's because it opts more of like the dream match thing, that the sort of stuff that would make the match like stick together better for me just doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're definitely right. There was a bit to it that did feel like, I won't say going through the motions, you know, that's probably the most negative way to say it. But yeah, like it kind of, isn't it so crazy that we're doing this and kind of missing that we're doing it, you know, if that makes sense, you know what I mean? Where it's, yeah, it's just self-conscious in a weird way and just not executing at the level you'd expect, which again, whatever, you know. Does it make it a bad match? Is it a bad match? No, but it has. I think that's the tough part here, too, is I do think that this might come across to some people as us being negative on it. And I still think this is a great match and I really enjoy it. It's just it probably was on too high of a pedestal. And I don't think that, you know, I saw someone, I can't remember who, right? It's just like a private chat or whatever, like kind of referencing the idea that like the Thatcher match was better. And like, I don't even know that that's much of a conversation. I don't think that's a revelation. Yeah. I don't think there's anything, you know what I mean? Like, that's just like, yeah, I think that that's just like, yeah, you know, like that's just, of course, that's not even, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I was the natural transition. I don't know. Do you want to say anything else?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, just to piggyback on it. Cause like we had like a lot of dialogue on that one, and like, we're passionate about this match because this is a match that we've cared about happening for so long. So like we're gonna have like a lot of thoughts on it. So go pay back on what you're saying. I still like the match. I think it's very good. Like, yeah. I just like, especially like with this, and it could be an expectations thing. Like, it's just, I've watched enough of these guys to be like, all right, like I feel like there was something better there. That's all.
Yeah. And I hate to even fucking say that, you know, because It is what it is. We got what we got. We're unfortunately not going to ever get the second match. And it's the kind of thing where I think that, you know, in the long view, you watch this match down the line, it's the kind of thing that you can really appreciate and enjoy, because there is a ton of really nice, intricate detail work in there with the techniques back and forth. And that's another thing, too. I mean, it almost feels like you could kind of cover up for some of the lacking stuff that we're talking about if you did present this, if you said, hey, this is a, you know, just give it some kind of fucking rules. Give this some kind of stipulation where it is like, you know, I hate to say something as trite as it, but like, this is like a grappling competition, right? You know what I mean? Like, do something to say, like, we're not going to have strikes. We're not going to have grittiness. We're not going to have, you know, present it as like a World of Sport, man, you know. But of course, Prestige is never going to do anything like that, because it's Prestige. And unfortunately, like, it's not a, you know, Prestige is not a good wrestling company. It's a company that sometimes books good matches, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the role that they serve. And so they're never going to like think deeply enough to do something like that. But yeah, if you had presented this as a something similar to what happened with like the Angelico and Arez thing, where it's like, this is a Yoveo, you know, Maestro 2 out of 3 falls dream match kind of thing, then this would make a lot more sense. But it makes it even harder to buy into it or to understand that as the concept when the commentary, because you can even not make the stipulation, but have the commentary tell the story that way. But the commentary didn't even tell the fucking story that way. So it makes it even harder to suspend the disbelief and appreciate it. That said, yes, in the ring, the two guys, they did a great job kind of presenting that kind of match. But it does, you know, it's glaring because you go like, okay, why are you not, you know, why are you not doing all XYZ thing that I would expect in a fight, in a, you know, a regular wrestling match, if you weren't. For me, a natural transition from this is to a match that I think did not suffer from this. It was similar in that it was a first time dream match. It's not similar because it's not like so close to someone's retirement. I guess you could argue star power wise. I guess maybe you could say Zach is a bigger star, but Nicole Matthews versus Speedball Mike Bailey. I don't know if you got a chance to watch this yet.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I saw it when it first dropped on YouTube.
Yeah, so I watched that within the last week, and to talk about the idea of just again bringing the fucking violence, like, Speedball and Nicole, I mean, I don't know that I've seen either of them strike as hard as I've seen them do it in that match, right? And I was shocked because I understand that they're familiar with each other, right? That they know each other. They've been on shows together. But the idea that they've never wrestled before, they're not really like local, you know, they're both Canadian, but they're opposite sides of the country. But they did not hesitate to just beat the piss out of each other. That match was phenomenal. And as I talk about, like, a first-time dream match kind of situation, like, that was fucking rough, aggressive, violent. The story of the match was great. Yeah, that was, again, it's just, I hate to, you know, but just comparatively to say, like, to not take it easy with someone just because you're not that familiar with them. Like, these two were absolutely fucking just unloaded on each other. You know, and there could be something to the history, right? Like I said, that they're familiar with each other. They've obviously met and hung out. And, like, Veda, it's no secret, you know, Veda Scott and Speedball are together. And, like, Veda has a long history with Nicole. So I'm sure that, like, they've probably been connected through her for a long time. So, yeah, but it was just, they felt incredibly comfortable with each other to the point where it almost, at times I was like, God damn, like, you guys could tone it down. You really don't need to be hitting each other this hard. You really don't need to be doing shit this fucking violent. And even something crazy as like how the spider German, like, kind of, I don't even put it past her that Nicole Speedball, they like did that on purpose. But it felt like an accident, but then they used it to play into more of the match. It was fucking crazy. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there again to say, like, a first-time matchup that kind of didn't have those same issues.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks since I watched that one, so my thoughts weren't the freshest. I definitely feel like you liked the match a little bit more than I did. Still thought it was very good. I thought some of like the alignment stuff was a little wonky, or like, well, at least for, like, the roles and like who was supposed to like it's. It's not that I thought the selling was bad. I feel like something about like the match alignment kind of felt weird for me, even though I feel like Nicole's a better seller than Speedball. So if you want someone to sell, it's probably better for Nicole to do that. But Nicole is also a better heel than Speedball.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird when, like, then you have Speedball, who can work on top, can work heel. She didn't do that before. But then you have Nicole, who is a solid face, but is much better as a heel. So, like, I feel like some of the stuff is just kind of off for me. But I still thought it was a very good match.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, and I do think that there was some stuff in there that you could pick apart that way when it came to it, but I do think that that the setting worked, I think, is part of it too. Because it is, you know, it's the East versus West thing, but it is also it's more home turf for Speedball. So even though he was kind of the aggressor and you could see him being presented as the heel, that when Nicole was on offense, her stuff still feeling heelish worked, because the crowd was going to naturally want to be behind Speedball in the East versus West kind of nature of things. So yeah, either way, just wanted to shut that up, because I saw it, and also that I thought that it was pretty sick. Just a really good match. Either way, you said you got caught up in AEW. I feel like the pre-show for AEW has started. Is there anything you want to talk about or shout out from the?
I caught up on Dragon Gate and AEW. So
oh yes, Dragon Gate's more important. Let's do Dragon Gate. And so, I don't know how much you care about AEW.
Oh, I mean, it was just the same that I caught up, and I guess I can talk about some matches, but it's whatever. Dragon Gate. I gave myself a goal. I was going to watch at least half of Rey de Parejas. That was sort of my goal here. So why I was behind on summer wrestling is because I was trying to catch up on Rey de Parejas. A lot of solid stuff. A lot of good stuff. I watched every Kung Fu Masters match. Jackie and Jason Lee had a really good tournament run. Obviously, culminates with them breaking up, but I thought that those two had a very good tournament run. And, you know, we're not going to get any more of them, but they definitely would have had a great shot at tag team of the year if they would have continued to be a tag team, but is what it is. Other stuff that impressed, I thought KZ and UT had a really good run. I thought Shun and Ishin had a really good run. Ishin is surprisingly probably one of my like five favorite guys in the company right now, even just looking at sort of like the numbers of the great matches or ratings on the matches. Ishin has been in a lot of good stuff and isn't just there. He has been notable and memorable and is a big part in what makes these matches good. So Ishin and Shun had a good run, and I'm really liking what I've seen from Ishin this year. And Madoka Kakuta and Dragon Daya had a very good run too. I didn't really care for like a lot of like the Yamato and Susumu stuff, or like the Naruki doing Dragon Kid stuff, even though they were good. But Madoka Kakuta and Dragon Daya had a very good run. I even mostly liked Monte and Hyo. And this kind of goes back to my point of like both of these guys are better in better in trios or tag settings than trying to be these singles guys. I come out of this tournament feeling more positive on Monte than I feel about Hyo. I feel like I'm kind of out on Hyo, to be honest. But Monte, I come away liking more. The April 7th Kakuta and Dragon Daya versus Hyo and Monte match. Kakuta is fucking incredible in that match. He is stellar in that one. His selling performance in that one is just great. Kakuta's performance in that match is one of my favorite performances of the year, to be honest. Did you see that match?
I'm sorry, which one was it? It was Kakuta and Daya Kakuta versus who?
Versus Mate and Hyo from April 7th.
Yes. I think I talked about that on the podcast with you. I mentioned it. I think you hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah, Kakuta is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
In that match. It's I love how good he is in that one. I also watched the Captain's Fall match that they had. Shit, I didn't even put my ratings in for that show yet. But I watched the Captain's Fall match from April 14th, and it's not great, but it's still a very, very good 8-man tag Dragon Gate action type of match. Jackie Funky Kame, if he is allowed the opportunity, if he still gets booked prominently and all this stuff, Jackie could honestly be a top 10 wrestler of the year, because even in these trios and tags and 8-man tags, he is very much the best guy in these matches. If he gets to continue to do that, maybe get some single stuff to sprinkle in, because obviously Jackie has always been in that sort of tag or trios place and not doing a lot of single stuff. If Jackie gets the opportunity, I feel like Jackie could be a top 10 guy this year. I'm not sure it'll happen. We're still early in the year. It's April, but I feel like Jackie could be a top 10 guy. I'm excited for the Dead or Alive cage match. If you don't know what the Dead or Alive cage match is this year, it's going to be KZ versus Jackie Funky Kame versus Hyo versus Shingo Skywalker versus Jason Lee. So that is going to be, honestly, I think that could be really good. I think that could be a really good match. So Dragon Gate, I'm caught up. Jackie Funky Kame has been excellent this year. Madoka Kakuta is kind of lagging behind a little bit, but he's not being emphasized as much. I do think he probably is going to get a Dream Gate shot at some point this year. Maybe even be the guy that wins King of Gate. I can see that happening. And yeah, that's kind of like sort of like my Dragon Gate takeaways so far.
Yeah, I double checked. Okay, so the Big Hug versus Decourage match, that was the time limit draw one, which I did see.
Yeah,
but I do not think I talked about it on the podcast. So I apologize for mentioning that I did. I also want to quickly correct before I move forward. This is a Canadian topography or Canadian geography correction. That show did not happen on the west coast of Canada. It did not happen on the east coast. It was Alberta, but it was like, I guess that's closer to the west coast. Either way, just before, because I know we have plenty of Canadian wrestlers who listen to the podcast and they're going to correct me. I apologize for implying or seeming like I was implying that it was on the west coast. I know that I literally just realized how far east Quebec is. I actually think I probably had Calgary and Quebec switched when it comes to the provinces. Anyways, moving forward. Dead or Alive seems really good. Jackie, I kind of worked myself into a shoot, and I was excited for the idea that Jackie could go heel, because some of the stuff that I saw during the Rey de Parejas, I thought that Jackie actually was looking like he could be a good heel. And especially, like, you know, if you don't really pay attention, like, someone had mentioned to me, like, Jackie has worked as a heel in other places, you know, because it's like kind of presented, especially if you're only a Dragon Gate fan, you may not be aware that, like, Jackie Funky Kame has worked heel in other companies, and he's good at it, right? So it is kind of like, he's just such a natural babyface, he could never be heel. But he actually is a good heel outside of Dragon Gate. So I was kind of like excited to see him do that. So then when Jason turned, it's kind of a bubble burst, not a disappointment, but I think I'm still on page with you that, like, the idea that he could end up in a top spot when it comes to, like, you know, an end of the year list, wrestler of the year kind of thing at the end of this year, because he has built up such a good foundation already. And he has a lot of stuff on the horizon still, especially with, and it's kind of tough because I think Monte is a shaky champion as is. And I think that, like, his kind of number one rival being a very obvious junior heavyweight compared to him being a major heavyweight doesn't really help make him look any stronger, but it is a natural rivalry that works really well. So I could see them having a big title match that could actually help bolster the Luis Monte title reigns. So it's tough, but that side of it doesn't really hurt Jackie, because Jackie just comes out of it looking good either way, right? He just has a solid match. So, yeah, like, I'm with you on all that. I do like, you know, they're bringing back the Dead or Alive, and that they're giving it, they're actually having a match that seems interesting for the cage match. So I'm into it. I kind of just doubled down on a lot of the stuff you said there. And Rey de Parejas was solid, you know? I mean, it was a really good tournament. It had a ton of great tag team wrestling. When I did mention it before, and we're talking about it before, it was kind of like, as you mentioned there, like, comparatively, it's like something like the D-Courage team, I think, is like just as good as any other team in the tournament, including, like, you know, the Monte Hill, the time draw there. So it is like kind of like when people overblow certain teams and say, like, oh, they could be tag team of the year. And it's like, okay, but, like, you don't even talk about how good, like, there are so many good teams in this tournament that, like, you know, you have two Natural Vibes teams that are just as good as anybody else in the tournament. You've got Dragon Kid and Doi that are just as good as anybody else in the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, it is tough for me to, like, look at it and say, well, yeah, Kung Fu Masters, could it be tag team of the year? And yeah, as you said, now they're broken up, so the conversation is kind of moot. But I mean, realistically, coming out of this tournament, I don't know that Kung Fu Masters really felt like head and shoulders above like a D-Courage team. And that's not that's not to say that they're bad. I'm just saying, like, you know, I think both teams came out really good.
It's more a compliment that, like, the tournament was more about, like, Natural Vibes' infighting and, like, other stuff. And, like, you know, the Doi and Dragon Kid team and Yamato and Susumu, this being their first time really teaming together in any real capacity, that something like D-Courage can get left behind when Kakuta and Daya were really fucking good. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to, again, talk about the matches, the things that stand out from AEW this week? Or as much as you've caught up, yeah.
Yeah, just real quick, as I caught up, we'll try to kind of, like, speed through, like, damn near, like, a month's worth of AEW stuff. So I liked all the Bryan stuff that I saw. Even, like, the Righteous and Archer six-man tag I thought was pretty good. Not great, obviously, because I feel like the crowd is, why are these guys here, in regards to, like, Dutch and Vincent? But those guys all worked really hard in that six-man. I liked Archer and Bryan from Dynamite, too. And I liked the other stuff that we've gotten. I loved the Bryan and Claudio versus Hobbs and Fletcher tag from April 13th on Collision. I thought that shit was awesome. And the Bunkhouse from last night was really good, too. So I've liked a lot of the Bryan stuff that we've gotten. Claudio has been incredible this year. He's in all these matches, and it's like, oh my god, Claudio is, like, he's been really, really fucking great. Shane Taylor versus Hook on that Battle of the Belts show, that was my favorite match, and that was a good hour of TV. That has Roderick and that has Roddy and Rocky. That is Athena and Red Velvet. But I thought Hook and Shane Taylor was awesome, and it is a notch below Joe versus Hook, because Joe and Hook is, like, a really well laid out sort of thing on top of, like, the action and how good the two guys were in it. But Taylor and Hook hits on a lot of those same beats, and on our in-ring level might even be better. Taylor's been really fucking good this year. As we're recording this show, they just had Shibata and Orange Cassidy versus Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty. And Shane Taylor has been phenomenal this year. Like, Lee Moriarty has been really good too. There's a Lee Moriarty and Shibata match that was great. But Shane Taylor has been so good this year.
I say it over and over. I want everyone to adopt it. But Shane Taylor Promotions, Shane Taylor is the heart and soul of Collision, man. He's the best thing going on the second show, and it's unfortunate that it's the show that a lot of people don't pay attention to, but god damn if he's not fucking killing it and really carrying that show.
Yeah, he's been excellent the whole year. Will Ospreay and Hobbs from April 3rd, that was really good too. That kind of, like, works out as well as you think it would, with it being Ospreay up against, like, a big strong guy and someone who can ragdoll Ospreay around. So there was a bunch of cool shit that, like, made me laugh just with how ridiculous it was that Ospreay got thrown around like that. So I thought that was super fun. I was excited for Claudio and Ospreay, and it was still very good. Didn't live up to my expectations, probably. I still think there's a better match with them, but I still enjoyed that match. I also still like the Elite as currently constructed with the Bucks and Okada, even though the matches against Daniel Garcia, Pac, and Penta, and then the tag from yesterday against FTR and Pac didn't really do a ton for me, but I still like the group as currently constructed and everything. So as I'm catching up, those were like my sort of big takeaway thoughts. I guess my favorite match would have been Brian and Claudio versus Hobbs and Fletcher. But they're just catching up, and you know, our pal Joseph had a tweet that went viral for some fucking reason and made rounds about like the Dynasty pay-per-view cycle being kind of weak. And I wasn't watching week to week, so like I literally can't comment on it because I wasn't watching the TV. But as far as like there was like some good stuff on the TV, and there's clearly some stuff that look, I was watching Dynamite every week. I was watching Dynamite and Collision every week, like live too, and then I suddenly stopped. And that's not just because of getting burnt out or having other things to do. It was because the quality of the shows did start dipping as well.
Yeah.
So there are things on here that are still good. You still have Shane Taylor. You still got Orange Cassidy doing good stuff. I am interested to see seeing more heel Trent. And I've liked Ospreay still. There hasn't been an Ospreay match where, and granted, I like Ospreay, but there hasn't been an Ospreay match still yet where I'm like completely out on it or done with it or annoyed by it. But it's a weaker cycle for sure, especially compared to Revolution. And I'm not particularly excited for the show tonight, but there was some good stuff coming out of the, I guess, month of TV that I caught up on.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that the thing about Joseph's tweet was that he was right. And that's the weirdest part about people having anything negative to say. Is he was absolutely correct. My only squabble with him is that I think Dynasty looks like a good show. Like, I don't really, I'm, you know me, I don't like fucking TV wrestling. Joseph, I would definitely defer to Joseph when it comes to TV wrestling. His opinion on that is better than mine.
He's a TV wrestling guy for sure.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, so to me, I'm like, whatever. TV wrestling is gonna suck. That's the whole point. Like, week-to-week shows are not good, but the big show looks good. Like, and that's like the difference. Like, and I understand for him, it's probably different because if the TV lead up is bad, he's going to kind of be like not as excited about the show. But even this last minute, I mean, Collision Rampage, it sucks because it's online. I think it was on the shows actually. Well, one of them kind of was, but wasn't. They put out the Danielson promo. It was related to the Danielson promo that was on the show, but they cut it together with like a clip from him backstage, and that shit could get you amped for the show, and it's exciting. But they are putting it out, you know, the day before the show on the B show or even the C show because you did have the post-match Rampage, and then the Tony Storm promo, which I don't know if you saw that, but it was on the show, but it was also, I saw the clip on Twitter and it was kind of making the rounds where she's got the smeared makeup and she's talking about that she's going to get serious and, you know, that she lives in hell and, you know, deals with her demons every night and shit. Like, I thought that was so hot and again, not attractive. This is not Sasha Banks I'm talking about here. But that she's like, it actually sounded like the point of that promo was for the freaks to say, hey, I understand you guys don't like the Timeless Toni Storm thing, but what she's telling you in that promo is on Dynasty, I'm going to wrestle. Me and Thunder are going to have a banger. And that was what I took away from that promo. I liked it in the context of the character as well, but it really did feel like the subtext was I'm going to have a kick-ass Toni Storm wrestling match with Thunder Rosa, right? And that's what it came out to me. So like even that, like if you had put that out where more people had seen it, maybe they'd be more excited for the card, because I do think that that's a match that every time I said I think everything on this show looks good, that was the match that most people were pointing to and saying I don't know about that one. Right. I don't know about Tony and Thunder. And to me, I'm like, no, I expect that to be a good match. They have good chemistry with each other. They're both solid in-ring wrestlers. And the Toni Storm, you know, Timeless Toni thing doesn't turn me off as much as it does other people. But also, I think that she can turn it up and have good wrestling matches, especially with the right opponents. And I think that the promo leading into it, the go home promo, was intentionally telling you, I'm going to wrestle. This is going to be a wrestling match. This isn't going to be gaga. This isn't going to be storyline. This is going to be bullshit. I'm going to have a kick ass wrestling match. And that's fine because, I mean, it makes sense in the context. Ooh, I said it's fine. What I really meant to say was it makes sense in the context because there's no reason why she should need Gaga to beat Toni Storm. Toni Storm can just lose. Or not Toni Storm. Thunder Rosa can just lose. This is not a match where you need to do sports entertainment Gaga and like protect Thunder Rosa. Like Thunder Rosa can just lose the match. It doesn't matter. So either way, I guess I ended up going on a diatribe about Joseph's tweet more than everything else, but who cares? I wish I had watched Rampage. I forgot that Rampage was on live after Collision and I didn't watch it, and I wanted to watch Yuka Sakazaki get injured by Ami Sakura. I didn't end up even watching the match, but you know, I've heard that, you know, Ami Sakura is just a terrible, dangerous wrestler, and Bryce Remsburg is too dumb to know what's going on, even though it absolutely looked like from the video that I saw that it was just part of the match and that Yuka Sakazaki was selling. But you know, nobody can fucking these the people who watch wrestling now really just love to get worked. It seems like it's the number one thing. Like they just believe everything that happens on TV is real. Like why would a wrestling show ever lie to me? So yeah, it's very, very interesting. Quentin, is there anything else you want to talk about before we go?
No, I think we're good and we can go ahead and get out of here. Finally made it under 2 hours. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, we're pushing it, but we're just there.
Yeah, no, I'm good. You can follow me on Twitter at QT underscore Moody. You can follow Tim at ROH Dutch. You can follow the website / the podcast network at Violent underscore people. Check out the stuff on the website at violentpeople.co. The Violent People 100 is now finished. So if you're someone that wanted to wait until the results were completely out, you can go see how everything played out here. Some stuff I was a little surprised by, some stuff not so surprised by, but either way, it was a really fun time watching all of that stuff go out. And thank you for everyone that voted and participated in it. And that's it. Donate to us on Ko-fi, join the Discord, whatever. Like the Discord has a bunch of fucking people in it. So a lot of people there. So if you're interested in any of those things, check out violentpeople.co, check out Violent People on Twitter, and thank you all for listening and hope you're here next time. These roads of flames are catching a fire. Tell me where you gone, gone, gone. I've been feeling for your love so long. We can praise God in the moonlight. Baby, if you with me, better do right. And I've been gone too long. And I'm hoping that you sing my song, my song. I've been on this road for way too long.